It's time to present Scott DuPont to bring you another episode of Finance Your Movie with tips and strategies to help you get your money to tell your story. It's time!
I am back with another episode. Thrilled today to have the I don't even know how to describe this gentleman, but I'll try in just a sentence or two. Monroe Mann has multiple master's degrees, more letters after his name and initials than I can even count. He's an entertainment lawyer, actor, writer, producer, and proud to call you my friend, Monroe Mann.
Thanks for having me, Scott. Always great to see you, and I'm happy to be a part of your podcast after hearing so much about it.
So, besides being the entertainment attorney for our documentary, Movie Money Confidential, which talks about how independent people raise money for their own films, you had done, obviously, you had been an entertainment attorney for at least 10, 15 years. We had met in Florida years ago before that. But on the filmmaking side, because I really want to drive down into keep today's episode on filmmaking and then get into the financing and all your expertise in that very, very specifically, the fundraising. You had done a bunch, I guess you had acted in a few films. One was a pretty big film, actually, Swim Fan, when you're in New York. And then you got into producing and directing your shorts. What was that genesis that, hey, I want to start making films?
It was actually because of my time on Swim Fan. And it was a great experience. I learned a lot, but I was led on multiple times with little carrots and sweet whispers of sweet nothings from the director, John Paulson, and also the cast of the crew, the producers, about, oh, hey, you should come to our barbecue, and we're introduced to so many people. Oh, hey, I think we're good. John Paulson was telling me, oh, we're going to upgrade your role. I'm going to make you a star. In his Australian accent, which I can't do. And it got so excited, as anybody would, thinking that the big director of this film is telling me he's going to make me a star and I can't wait to work with you more, this and that. And I spent weeks and weeks, maybe months, I forget how long I was involved with that. But the thing that was on my mind is thinking, ooh, they're going to make me a star. Oh, he's going to make something happen. He's going to introduce me to people. Long story short, none of that transpired. And I realized maybe there were good intentions, or more often than not, I think people just make promises they can't keep, just trying to butter you up and keep you compliant and cooperating on set. And I just started to realize, wow, for all of the time and effort and energy that I spent dreaming of sugar plums, I could have spent that time writing a screenplay and just cast myself in the lead role, and voila. And I get a lot of blowback from a lot of actors when I tell them the story. They go, yeah, but I don't want to produce. I don't want to be a director. I don't want to raise money. I said, do you want to act? And they go, yeah. Well, how badly do you want to act? Because if you really care, you'll do what I did and produce your own production. And as you know, You Can't Kill Stephen King did pretty well. And I was a co-star of a film as a result. And but it was a heck of a lot of work, and emotionally, physically, financially, it was exhausting. But I did what I wanted to do. I starred in a major feature film.
Bingo. Same exact story to me. I quickly became a frustrated actor. And then I believe it was in 1999 or 1998 when we started, we went out and did our own movie, The Bros, and I had one of the bigger roles as an actor in the movie. So you and I both took control of our careers. So let's kind of fast forward through the short films. I think that's a very typical strategic path to build some credibility. So let's talk about your feature, which ended up being very, very successful. You Can't Kill Stephen King. Micro budget. How did you pull together the little bit of money that you did put into it?
We glossed over the short films, but I will say probably the number one reason why I was able to get the money for this is because I showed what I was able to do with short films. And the main investor was really impressed to see how much I did on such tiny $500 budgets for these short films, thinking, wow, imagine what I could do if I gave you, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. And
Proof of
that's the,
concept.
yeah, I think it, that that's the num I mean, we spoke earlier about how you wanted me to talk about that trust idea in the book that I wrote. I mean, very briefly, those five things are track record, rate of return, unique investment opportunity, sales and systems, and a team. And when I first tried to raise money for a feature film, which was a wakeboarding film, which is in some ways how I think we got involved. I don't, can you just remind me, how did we meet in Florida? Was it through Leslie Kent or
It was probably through Leslie Kent. I was the local president of the Orlando
Florida Motion Picture Television
chapter,
Institute.
Florida Motion Picture and Television Association, and you came to one of our monthly meetings.
In Orlando?
I believe so.
Maybe I met you right around the same time I met, maybe it was that same trip when I first
Or
met Leslie.
maybe you
I don't
met
know.
Leslie also at the same meeting.
That may make sense.
But
Anyway,
anyway,
yeah, related to that.
so you have proof of concept through these short films.
Yeah,
You
and that
start
was the
reaching out to people.
yeah, proof of concept. People were able to trust that I knew what I was doing as a filmmaker. With the Stephen King idea, it was a horror comedy. That's a very unique idea. And the script was well written. I had enough experience as an entrepreneur and a salesman so that people would know that, okay, he knows what to do with the money. He knows how to get other people involved. And the team. The main thing that I didn't have, this is actually something good for your listeners. You may think you have a team when you don't. And what I mean by that is back in 2001, when I was trying to create the wakeboarding film, the script of which I still have, maybe I'll end up producing, maybe you'll be on board, Scott. Who knows where the future holds. But at the time, I had a huge investor who was very keen on putting up the money. But in the end, and I told him I got Avril Lavigne on board on the soundtrack. Her record label is going to be releasing the album. I had Mike Fennell, who was the producer of Gremlins and Small Soldiers and The Burbs. I mean, I had a great team. But this guy, Brandt, said, yeah, but have you made a feature film before? Have you made any films before? Have you directed a film ever? And to every question, I had to say no.
So
And so I realized.
you had not done the shorts yet.
No,
Okay.
I had no, I was just an act. This was very shortly after the Swim Fan thing. I did Swim Fan and then wrote that script probably 6, 7 months later. And then I was magically got involved with all of these people, you with Grant, with Leslie Kent, the wakeboarding folks. And I thought everything was just going to go smooth sailing from there. And by, you know, 26, I'd be a millionaire movie star, Tom Cruise, Keanu Reeves. You know, life doesn't always happen. Not always. Life often does not happen as you expect it's going to unfold. But anyway, that fell apart. I ended up getting deployed to Iraq. Had I not gone to Iraq, who knows what may have happened? It's woulda, coulda, shoulda. I don't know. But while I was in Iraq, I was thinking, what the heck happened? Why didn't I raise the money? And I ultimately, that's why I ended up going to law school when I got back from Iraq and going to film school. And I thought, okay, he wants me to know that I know how to run the business, and he being any film, any investor, and they want to know that I actually know what I'm doing. And so that's what created the track record, all the short films. But I realized putting together a team, it doesn't mean you just have names on board. It doesn't mean you just have letters of intent or he's going to be an actor in it. It doesn't matter if Tom Cruise is the star if you have no production crew. Or the director doesn't know what he's doing because then Tom Cruise quits halfway through. So I realized through this how I ultimately got the money for the Stephen King film. I put together a real team. A, I was now a director because I had 12 short films under my belt, one of which was 47 minutes, which is in some circles is
Wow, that's a
feature.
long short.
Right. So I technically in some websites it says I've done two features, Origami
Wow.
Death and You Can't Kill Stephen King. But all of these little things build that trust. And that's ultimately why is somebody going to give you money? Because they feel it's safe in your hands. or you're going to give them such a return on investment, which doesn't necessarily need to be financial. It could just be an adventure. Sometimes you pay money to go skydiving. You're not getting money back, but you had a great experience. You have a great story. That's ultimately anyone who's trying to raise money. You've got to, they have to trust you, just that normal word. And you need to think, ask yourself, what is every single reason why somebody would not trust me with their money? And then give a response to each one, or better yet, have an actual solution through film school, getting a lead, either becoming a lawyer or getting a good lawyer on the team. Having Mike Fennell was great as an associate producer, but would have been better if he was a full-on producer, because Brant said, is this guy Mike Fennell going to be on set? I said, no.
Well, Brant taught you a lot of lessons.
Oh, I mean, I learned.
What a blessing he slapped you in the face before you had made a single short film, because all those other things led to your incredible career. And really, I want to talk real quick about how successful a micro-budget movie can be. Tell them what happened. I guess you went to Cannes. You've sold it. Well,
not
under $100,000 budget, right?
But deferred pay is an amazing thing. And this was a SAG ultra low budget. And we still have, and that's, it's, you can do deferred pay to the actors.
So under 100K, under 200K?
Back in the day, I think it was under $100,000 budget.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what it is now, but I'm.
So what happened with this sub 100K film?
It
good
did.
Things.
What, it did like. What 99.9999% of filmmakers never do, which is it got finished. It got an agent in Los Angeles. We went to Cannes Film Market. We sold it to multiple international territories. Then we got another agent for domestic. It was on Amazon Prime. It was on Netflix for a while back when they had DVDs. For about 6 months, you could actually have gotten that. And it was on Amazon Prime. That was probably its heyday. It's great. You know, it's apex. It was when I could tell my friends just, hey, yeah, you can watch it for free if you have Amazon Prime, which a lot of people do. And today it's still making money. And we still give payments to our actors. We still, that deferred pay. That's the other thing. So many people think of deferred pay as never going to get paid.
Unless they trust you.
And yeah, and I guarantee you, people say, why haven't you done another film yet? Why haven't you done another? It's not for lack of capability. It's not for lack of ability. It was emotionally draining. And anyone who's made a feature film know, especially when you're handling many hats, it's exhausting. But I'm still keeping my eyes open, because now instead of showing 15 short films, I could probably raise 300, 500, maybe $1 million simply because of Stephen King. And you teach this too, Scott. You teach this to your clients. Is you keep piggybacking. And you one success and it leads to others. And I think that's the most important thing, that if you could forget about the budget, finish a feature film, make it professionally done from an editing standpoint, get it into a festival or two and get some form of distro. Even if it's on YouTube, it doesn't matter if it goes through a distribution company. If you have a feature film that people can watch, you are better. You are more successful than 99% of wannabe filmmakers, because you finished.
And making money year after year after year after year.
Absolutely, and that's. And you talk about this too. It's don't always. And I was guilty of this when I first started too. It was always about, I want my first project to be an Oscar winner. I want my first project to be this multi-million-dollar success story that launches me. Could it have happened? Of course. Could that have happened with The Bros? Yes. It didn't. And that's the case for most people. And I think, though, they give up because they see all these steps and go, oh, what a drudgery. Or they think of, oh, it's going to take forever to get there. But there's that story of the guy goes, 87-year-old guy goes into a music store and he sees someone playing piano and he sighs. And the salesman says, why are you sighing? He goes, I'm 87. Do you know how old I'll be by the time I can play piano like him? And the salesman said, yeah, the same age you'll be if you don't.
Interesting.
And so that's my advice, is like, look, just get something produced, no matter how successful it is. That will be a stepping stone to doing the next one. You're going to meet more people. You're going to be building that team, the credibility, your track record. You'll be learning how to run a business better. So those sales and systems, all of these things. I haven't done any filmmaking since Stephen King, except short little things for YouTube or helping on someone else's films. But I don't think my film career is over. I just haven't found that muse or that inspiration to get where I realize, okay, I'm ready to dive back into this. But the beauty is that once you get to that level, like because I have a feature film that's already out that has success, I never go, I'm not a has-been. That is, I am a has-been in terms of no one's going to approach me and say, hey, I want you to produce this, probably. But because of that threshold that I've created because of Stephen King, I just put together a business plan and get a good script. 100%, I can raise that money now because people know even more. He knows what he's doing.
Well, I have no doubt. And I know you got like five or six different businesses. You got a zillion things going on in multiple states. I hope that
it's
one...
It's a criminal enterprise is what you're saying.
I hope that one day you do make your next feature whenever. And here's the thing, Monroe. At a $500,000 million budget, you won't be wearing five hats. And it's a lot less stressful when you have a whole team and assistants and all this infrastructure around you.
To be honest, that's the reason why I haven't done... No, it's one of the reasons. I haven't found a script that I'm 100% passionate about. That's another thing.
You got to be.
You got... If you are not 100% passionate about that script, you will not have the stamina to go through all the crap that I went through to get to where I got. I'm so proud that Stephen King was successful and we got distributed stuff. But I loved the script. Everyone was behind it. It was a labor of love that turned into a financial success. And I will not do any project again unless I have that internal drive once again. But even if I do have it, you're right. There is no way I will. And everyone who did Stephen King on the upper levels of management are of the same opinion. No way are we going through that again. Wearing, literally, I'm doing script rewrites while I'm getting makeup put on.
Yeah.
While the DP is asking me, it's like, I'm glad I did it, and I'm glad I was capable of managing all the hats. I do not recommend. I'll put it this way: it's okay to manage many hats easily if the project is so much more is smaller. We had about 85 people on that set throughout the whole month of August in 2010. And I'm wearing, I mean, just wearing one hat, being
crazy.
An actor is enough. Being the makeup person is enough. Being scripts, I mean, but managing so many at the same time, it's exhausting.
Well, and I can still feel your passion several years later, which is great.
It's there. It's just gotta, in time.
I want to talk about the book a little bit, because sitting down to write, publish, and release a book is another exhausting thing. It doesn't, I'll just write a book and it'll take me a week and I'll get it out. What was it? What inspired you to write this book, Trust, about how independent filmmakers could raise money for their independent films?
I guess not everyone is going to have a brand. Most people are not going to have a brand Anderson come into their life and indirectly guide you. And I would say a mentor is typically somebody who actively takes on a role of guiding you to become what they are. So I can't say that Brant was a mentor, but he was an indirect guide. And I stumbled upon him, it just as people stumble upon things here and there. I just wanted to create a guide to be that brand, a more direct mentor. So guide was my indirect guide. I took all that information and packaged it and saying, oh, good, now here, I can be someone's direct mentor. They don't have that's experience. And now they don't have to go through.
And this was after Stephen King, right?
What was?
The book.
Yeah. Stephen
King, had that experience as well.
That's what inspired it. I didn't really, I'm glad you made that distinction. I didn't realize how I had changed and grown as a filmmaker, entrepreneur, salesman, fundraiser, all that, until after Stephen King was done and I sat down and went, huh, wow, that thing went to Cannes. Wow, made a movie. And I thought, how did this happen? But the wakeboarding film didn't. The scripts on both of them were, I would say, equally good. It's not like one was magical and the other one. No, they're about the same. And that's when I really started to figure out what was the difference. And that's when I came, and I realized, wow, Brant didn't trust me. Investor John did trust me from the main investor for Stephen King. And I was thinking, what's the difference? Why did one trust me and the other one didn't? And that's basically how I came up with that acronym.
I want to, in the few minutes we have remaining, and I've read the book multiple times because, like, literally today, I'm making phone calls right after this podcast to potential investors for my next film, working with some clients. I'm sending out emails to potential investors. And I often need to be reminded of these core principles that you laid out so eloquently in your book. Please take a few minutes and go through the T-R-U-S-T again.
Sure. T is for track record. This is why we glossed over the discussion of my short films and Scott's, but those short films are what gave us the track record so that people would trust us enough to give us money, because they knew that literally a feature film is the same thing as a short film. It's just on a larger scale. Jumping to the S, the sales and systems. I just said the scale. Just because you've done short films doesn't mean you know how to do a feature. This is why you need systems in place and you need to have a good team. I would not have gotten the money for the feature film if it were just me. It was because I had a director of photography who had worked on multiple feature films before. My co-director, Ronnie Khalil, had extensive experience in filmmaking as well. Our director of photography doubled as our, it was kind of like it's a three-way directing thing, because we knew up front that we couldn't manage everything. So Ronnie and I were the main two directors, if there was an issue, Jorge would make the tie-breaking vote. And that was a system that we put in place in the beginning, because otherwise your production gets run down and you have poor systems in place. So think systematically about how to make this thing run well from development to pre to production, post, and then marketing. You is unique investment opportunity. As a filmmaker.
What was the R again?
Oh, we didn't get down there yet. Okay. I'll come back to it. Yeah.
So
I've been jumping around. All right. Track record is the R is the rate of return. So remember what I was saying. It does not have to be financial. You have to figure out, what do people want? Somebody wants their daughter to have a small speaking role, and that to them is worth $100,000. Someone else says, I want to star in the movie and I won't do it unless I'll give you $5,000. Then you have to weigh your way. Is it a good rate of return? $5,000 giving away the starring role? If it's Tom Cruise or Whoopi Goldberg, maybe, because that you get a star name. You need to make those decisions. But just remember, you need to give your investor something valuable, and it doesn't need to be money. We talked about the unique investment opportunity. The fact that you're a filmmaker, you already have a unique investment opportunity. But if you can make that script extremely unique with a good marketing plan, that type of stuff makes it a little bit more unique and sets it apart from everyone else who's pitching them. The S is sales and systems. You are an entrepreneur and a businessman. Why did Stephen King succeed? Why did the bros succeed with Scott? Because we're entrepreneurs first. And I'm a very talented, creative guy. So are you, Scott. But that's not why we succeed as a filmmaker. It's because we know how to manage people. We know how to manage money. We know how to manage different personalities. And that type of stuff needs to be there to get to the finish line and get your film to
including camp. Marketing.
Marketing. I mean, the beginning and end of every film is 100% business. That's it. And the last is a team. As I mentioned before, it doesn't just mean getting letters of intent. You need people on your team who have done what has already that you're trying to do, and who are actively a part of it, not some distant associate producer who maybe will pick up a call at 2 a.m. No, you need someone there on set with you who you can, hey, wake up. We got a big problem tomorrow. Investors will love the fact that that person is sleeping on the couch on your set.
Yeah, because that guy, that even if you have to wake somebody up with 20 years of filmmaking experience, that guy's, oh, no problem. This is what you do.
And our line producer, as many of you know, line producer basically runs the logistics of a lot of things happening on that set. He had done everything, Law and Order, SVU, Dallas. I mean, for the last 25 years, he had been on every film set. Just as Scott said, but he was there sleeping with us whenever there was a problem. If he weren't there, it would have potentially derailed the project.
Good luck.
But he said, I know somebody. Oh, this happened before. This and that. And so that's the TMTs, they buttress each other because your team itself needs a track record. So all the stuff kind of goes into a big circle, but you could just put down those letters, T-R-U-S-T, for your project, and then really figure out, would I invest in this thing? Do I have a likelihood of seeing this money again or getting something out of it? 9 times out of 10, if you're honest, the answer is no. It doesn't mean give up. It means start recruiting more team members, go back to school, maybe do a different project instead of this one right now. Maybe do a smaller one. Too many people say, I want to do a feature immediately. And that's fine.
Or I want to do a $2 million feature.
Yeah, or something like that, which is fine. Again, if you have the right team. I mean, if you had me and Scott helping you, maybe you could start with a $2 million because we've got that experience. But if you're just doing stuff on your own and you don't have a big network, just do a 2-minute short film, 2-page script with 3 scenes, interior restaurant, exterior restaurant, and at the bar. That's hard enough. And if you can make that beautiful, you're going to build your confidence. People are going to watch it on YouTube. You're going to finish it. And then you can say, awesome, I'm a filmmaker. I'm a director. I made movies. And they go, can I see it? Yes, you can. They go, oh, when's your next one? In fact, I'm raising money for it now. Boom. That little tiny short, stupid short film that you thought was a waste of time is the thing that results in you making your $2 million film.
Awesome. Oh. And where can people find this book, Trust? Because I highly, highly recommend getting it.
Sure. So you can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Actually, no, it's just on Amazon. Just search for Trust Monroe Man, which you should. But if you do Trust Monroe Man, it'll be the first result. And I'd just like to share with your listeners, if any of you want to join a really awesome global personal growth community, I started a not-for-profit called Break Diving. Basically, don't wait for opportunities to float to the surface. Dive in and make your big break yourself. And you can join us at breakdiving.io. That's BREAKDIVING.io. It's free to join. And I would love to answer any of your questions if you join, if you find me there and send me a message.
It's a great organization. I'm in and out of there from time to time. And it's still free, correct?
Yeah, there's a premium membership if you want to upgrade, but the core features are all free forever.
Awesome. One parting, I always like to give my guests one parting bit of advice or kind of a big overview question. If someone is in the phase where they've got a killer business plan, they've got the track record, they've got the team, they've got the script, they've got everything. Mm-hmm. What are one or two kind of lasting parting shots of advice when they're reaching out, getting people on the phone and asking people for money?
Number one, don't change the amount of money that you need. If your budget is precise, don't let the investors try to negotiate you to cutting corners. For example, your insurance budget needs to be a lot higher than you think, and your food budget, your craft services. It's a very stressful thing on a set. Don't have them have cold sandwiches, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So I would just say, be firm. Once you get a good budget, be firm. And oh, great story. I'm glad you asked.
I love stories because we're all learning from these stories.
So I applied to a very competitive job locally here in Miami Beach and about 4 months ago, I'd say I applied. Heard nothing from them, so I thought it was a no. Month and a half ago, they got in touch and said, hey, we want to interview you. I said, oh, well, that's funny. I thought I was completely out of the running now. Went on the interview, thought I knocked it out of the park. It was an interview with one of those panel interviews with 3 people. So it's always a little bit stressful, but I did well. I got an email 2-3 weeks ago. Dear Monroe, you did not pass the oral board interview for the position. Thank you for your interest. Goodbye. I was so depressed. It put me into a big tailspin because I wanted this position really. It was perfect. It was close to where I lived. It meshed into everything else I was doing. And I thought they were really like stupid. Like how did I not pass that? How could someone be better than me for this position? Yesterday, I get another email. This has been 3 weeks. I'd moved on in my mind. Yesterday, dear Monroe, please disregard the email from 3 weeks ago. You did, in fact, pass the oral board interview, and you're progressing to the next phase. And so the lesson I learned, no matter how many no's you get, and they say, I will never invest. I will never be a part of you. I'll never go out with you. I'll never help you. Wait 2 weeks. Because look at that. I thought it was done. And no's turned around. I think, as someone said recently, no means next opportunity.
Yes, correct. Right? No means next opportunity.
And it's interesting. I just share that with you because you're going to receive a lot of no's. Keep going because you're eventually going to get one yes. And when that first person writes a check, you're off and running because you can piggyback on that. And more, and you're going to feel confident. You're going to be able to say you're not the first investor. So-and-so came in here, blah, 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 blah. And even if they say no, call back. Go back to the other people who said absolutely not. Because when they say no, and you call back and say, I've got $50,000 in the bank from 27 investors, suddenly go,
a few of them might come in.
I think almost certainly a few of them. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Those no's, it's just not right now. Come back to me with
next opportunity. I want to add one thing about that 2 week or month, or if you don't hear back, I can't stress how important follow-up is. So yesterday I finally got in touch with a friend. I hadn't talked to him for like 30 years, but he's a potential six-figure investor, 100,000 plus. Mm-hmm. And we emailed a few times. We DM'd a few times. We texted a few times, social media, because I got to get him on the phone to explain my project to see if he wants the business plan. So this was going on for 2.5 months. I finally just called him once again. This is like the seventh or eighth outreach over 2 months. The first thing he said to me, Scott, I am so, so, so sorry. I've been meaning to call you. My phone's been blown up in different directions. So
that's it.
To piggyback on what you said, Monroe, mm-hmm. You got to follow up. Don't stress, but just till you get a yes or a no. And if they say no, it's next opportunity.
And one last bookend. You're raising money to make a film. If you can't find money for that, you're not trying hard enough, because everybody wants to be a film investor, be a part of Hollywood. Literally, just, I forget which book it was that I read. Oh, you know what? Maybe it was my book. I think it's Trust. Yeah. I was saying, look, right now, believe it or not, you know someone who's making a lot of money, but you have no idea because they don't talk about it.
100%.
And the guy that works at McDonald's, you think that person is struggling. There are a lot of people working at McDonald's for non-monetary reasons. They want to just get out of the house. Maybe they're doing community service. Who knows? Pitch to everyone. Even if someone 100% wants to give you $25, you get $25 from 100,000 people. You got a massive budget. Don't rule anybody out. And just as Scott said, like, he called the same guy 8 times. I'm sure he didn't want to call again, probably thinking he did, because we know this psychologically. But even for you and me, Scott, it's still, we have to remind ourselves, don't psych yourself out. Call again and look what happened.
He was thrilled when I got him.
He was thrilled to hear from you.
So I love your passion, Monroe. I could talk to you for another 30 minutes. We're up against the time.
We'll come up. We'll do it again sometime.
And anyone, once again, Trust, the book by Monroe Mann. Anyone needs a really good entertainment attorney, not only an entertainment attorney, but a filmmaker himself. Monroe Mann, thank you, thank you, thank you once again.
It's time. There's never been a better time to make your own film. And if you have a dream project you're excited about and 100% committed to getting it funded, go to financeyourmovie.com, click on the green telephone, you'll see our calendar and find an open spot. We'll do a one-on-one call, which will be the best hour you've ever spent getting clarity and strategy towards financing your movie.